Welcome to the Ivy Podcast. We're just two aunties sharing our experience through the lens of one Blackfoot woman and one Anishinaabe woman. And we are Indigenous Vision, an educational nonprofit based in Montana and Arizona. We are 100% Indigenous led, and this is our podcast. Check us out at indigenousvision.org to learn more about our work, make a donation, or play back any of our radio shows and this episode.
Hey, welcome to the Indigenous Vision Podcast. This is officially episode 70, and it is a very special one as I'm here with the Executive Director of Indigenous Vision, Suta Collinglast, to talk about chronic wasting disease. How's it going?
It's going really good. I've had, like, work is pretty intense right now, but it's all good stuff. And just did a Blackfoot placemat event this past weekend, and I finally got to get everybody out that I had been, you know, I spent the last year, last summer living in Shoto, and I didn't feel lonely because I felt like it was a place that feels like home, but I had, you know, I just kept wishing that I had more Blackfoot people out there seeing what I was seeing and feeling what I was feeling. I had two really great comments, one from Jesse DeRozier, who said, it feels like a room in my house that I've been avoiding for a long time. And I thought that was really cool. And then my nephew, he said, I thought it was going to be really boring, but it turned out to be actually a lot of fun. And I was like, wow, that's it. That's all I need. That's perfect commenting.
That's awesome. I saw some video that you sent. Yeah, there was quite a group out there. I know that I've been summarizing what you've been doing out in the field with chronic wasting disease. And it's something that I've also been learning about this year. I didn't realize the severity of how much there actually is out there and could potentially be in the plants, in the animals that people are consuming off of the land. So let's just start at the beginning for someone who has no idea what chronic wasting disease is. How would you describe it to someone who's never even heard of it before?
Awesome question. Chronic wasting disease is a prion or a protein that is getting misfolded. Usually prions come in really nice, kind of like ramen noodle looking, that's the structure that they have, those intertwining swirly things. And then when it hit CWD, prions are misfolded and they look really tangled and messy. And chronic wasting disease is like a spongy encephalitis, kind of like mad cow, or those types of diseases where the lymph node system, the nervous system, so the lymph nodes, the brain stem, the brain of the infected animal just get destroyed. And so sometimes it takes a couple of years to notice if a deer is sick. It can take a couple more years to have symptoms actually manifest into the lowered head, the lack of fear of humans, the drooped head, the drooling. You'll start to notice them like kind of standing bow-legged, like they're trying to keep their balance. And yeah, they do start stumbling. And I saw one deer out near the Meriwether site, which is what I'm calling our ground zero. That's where the Blackfeet Nation's first positive was. And I recorded this deer and I was a little bit concerned because the deer started prancing like super beautifully across this wetland. And then it kind of tripped. And I was like, is that normal? Like, does a deer trip? Because they start to lose their coordination with this disease. And so it's been an interesting study so far.
I remember when mad cow disease was like in the media and it was a big concern with livestock. And there was videos of these poor animals just like losing their minds and all their functionability. What can happen, do you think people can get chronic wasting disease is pretty much what I'm going to ask.
I think if we don't manage it and try to keep the numbers and the outbreak low, then I don't think it would be likely that humans can get it. But CWD is never talked about in the way it impacts Indigenous communities and cultural practitioners like myself. Generally, just our lifestyle, our subsistence lifestyle exposes us to more prions than the usual average American. The CDC recommends that we don't eat meat contaminated with CWD, and that's why they're requiring testing. And around the Blackfeet Reservation has been designated a priority area. And then there's my study in Fish and Wildlife, really trying to get outreach into the community to get your deer and your elk and moose tested as it comes in this year. And then we're going to be mapping all of those. But right now, I think just exposure wise, if you're an Indigenous person subsisting off of moose, elk, or deer, and then you're also collecting your plants and your herbs from these same roots and herbs from these same areas, it's a really good idea to know if those areas are contaminated, because CWD prions have the ability to be taken up by plant roots, stems, and leaves, and they maintain their viability, which means they can infect anything eating those plants afterwards. So if a deer comes along and it's contaminated with CWD and it pees, drools, or defecates on soil and plants right there, those plants are then carriers of the CWD contaminated prion, and anything that comes through and eats that plant will then has a possibility of getting CWD. And this is where my study kind of comes in, is that I noticed in some of the CWD positive areas, those heavy contamination areas, which are down in Colorado, Minnesota, and Saskatchewan, I noticed that there were some negative deer in heavily contaminated areas that have been contaminated for decades. So I started thinking that there must be some environmental factors that are impacting the deer's health. And luckily, I had a friend at Working Dogs for Conservation, and they said, well, we can check it out using the dogs. And so the whole CWD study is that we're doing is to kind of look at the impact, the overall impact of climate changes and drought and its impacts on our plants and our animals, and how disease is spreading across this in combination with other cumulative environmental stressors that it comes across. And so I feel like in some areas that have been especially drought stricken and food is low, maybe there's a cyanobacteria algal bloom in that habitat area. That's another immune suppressant for animals. It can kill a dog within a few hours, and it makes humans experience flu-like symptoms within 24 hours, severe flu-like symptoms. And that's cyanobacteria. If you see that, report it to us or the state, because there's a lot of agencies monitoring that. And that is from warmer temperatures, lower water, and just overall like decreased water quality. And so I think all of these environmental stressors are contributing to how and when deer get chronic wasting disease. And so we're testing tests against each other to figure out the fastest, cheapest way for tribal nations to monitor this spread. And then also making sure that we as a community of cultural practitioners are sure that where we're collecting is clean and free of CWD.
Wow, that's like a lot, Suta.
It is. And everybody keeps saying, like, let's get to the point. What's the point of the study? And the point is to, you know, there's multiple points of the study, right? To test the tests against each other. Tribal nations need fast, easy testing with really short turnaround times, because we don't have the storage to hold our deer, because walk-in freezers cost $21,000. And my nation, the Blackfeet Nation, well, none of the nations have a walk-in freezer right now. So if you're a member of a tribal nation and you have a budget to get a walk-in freezer, these walk-in freezers are a really good idea for holding our deer. And then the testing shed, quoted to us by Penn State Vets, they have a small testing shed, and they said it cost about $55,000 to get started up, but it has all the equipment in the little shed and the wiring, and that reduces the turnaround time of finding out whether or not your deer is positive.
So people are pretty much, without these testing, are eating their meat blind, whether or not knowing if it could potentially have CWD in it, which is kind of frightening, right? Because you think about how long you were saying it stays in the system of a deer. I mean, how long has this been around really? Because you said decades for Colorado. That just blew my mind.
Right. It was first found in 1967. And I believe it was in Colorado where they found that at. But
it blows my mind how there's no one really talking about this. I mean, you're the first person that I've ever heard about this from, which is really alarming in my opinion.
Right. And then it's really hard to stay on top of these emerging animal diseases. And this one's not even emerging. It's just, it's been around since 1967, because it was first identified in a captive mule deer in a Colorado research facility in 1967, and first recognized in captive mule and black-tailed deer in 1979 in Wyoming. So they're recognizing it in farming environments in this. And then by 1981, we had our first documented CWD case in free-ranging Rocky Mountain elk and mule deer in Colorado. And so up till now, where we got our first positive, and before, I think, I have no idea why I wasn't worried about it before, but the only positive that I was aware of was way over in the western corner of Montana in Libby. And then you have Whitefish and Glacier National Park and the Blackfeet Reservation, but you have those Rocky Mountain barriers right there, right? And then you go eastward and that there's the Sweetgrass Hills, and the positive was found on the east side of Sweetgrass Hills. And then last year, the first positive on the Blackfeet Reservation. And then I found out that the prion has the ability to be taken up by plants. And so I put that together with my degree in water resources has a specialty in mining contamination cleanup. And I took a ton of science classes. It's practically a science degree, but they weren't able to offer that to me. But yeah, in these classes, I learned how to construct a wetland cell series. And we stock those wetland cell series with different wetland plants that are proven to take up heavy metals. And that's how we're starting to clean out a bunch of mining contaminated areas, is by using these awesome wetland plants that just have the ability to just suck all those contaminants out of the ground. And so then when I saw that CWD had the ability to be taken up by roots, stems, and leaves, I'm like, that's just like the heavy metals. So we have two things that could be really hurting us right now. We could have our wetland plants, mint, sweetgrass, willows, all of those things in contaminated areas that the deer are also eating, and us as well, because we have pretty high cancer rates, I think more than normal. And then we have CWD on top of that. And so I just think as climate changes and drought impacts take hold, we'll start to see an increase even more in diminished and degraded environmental conditions, habitat conditions, ability to harvest food, which is a treaty, right? Right? Like ability to hunt and harvest our foods, and to be healthy and sure that we're eating healthy foods. And so there might be some hunters who are not worried about CWD right now because it's just a disease that deer get, but I believe it has transferred to a pig in this last year. And once anything transfers to a pig, humans are automatically more susceptible to getting those diseases as well.
Wow. So who's supporting you in this work to get the Blackfeet Nation or any as like a blueprint for testing? I mean, it would obviously be so beneficial if every nation could have their own little testing site or shed. So who's supporting you in this?
Oh my goodness, the support has been phenomenal from everybody. Buzz Cabell, the director over at Blackfeet Fish and Wildlife, hired my coworker and someone to help me on this, Joe Hagberg. He's the CWD officer over at Blackfeet Fish and Wildlife, and is helping coordinate this and many of other of the studies that they have going on there. Blackfeet Environmental Office is helping with just how we communicate this and the sampling sites and sampling data so that I can really take a good look at the environmental trends over the last 30 years. So they said they would provide that data. And then Working Dogs for Conservation has provided and told me, like, just take the dogs out, schedule when you need to be out, and don't worry about the samples. And so right now they're carrying that part of the project, which is just amazing. And so they're helping with networking the labs that we take the mink and otter poop to. And the mink and otter scat is collected by the dogs because it would take us forever. It looks like a piece of dirt with a little shiny fish flakes in it. And sometimes it's not neatly on a rock of a different color. Sometimes it's right there in the dirt. So it would take us forever to find these scats. With the dogs, it's a quick, you know, half an hour walk along the riverbank and then an easy lab sampling process. Minnesota Prion Research Labs is the lab that is developing the world's first field deployable water and soil sampling test, which is amazing. That's the test I've really been looking forward to, because that presence or absence test will, I think, be the fastest way to indicate whether or not an environment or a habitat is contaminated with CWD. And then we'll be able to look for using the dogs and the fish and wildlife officers to locate that sick deer and eliminate it from the herd. Blood Tribe Lands and Alberta Environment got $45,000 in a matching grant to bring the dogs up to Canada and Blood Tribe Lands and get equipment for that. And then the Blackfoot Confederacy is also very supportive and has given a small grant to get the dogs out on the Eastern Slopes area to start looking for any environmental stressors. And people are asking, like, well, why aren't you going just for CWD? Well, because our deer are not getting CWD just out of nowhere. Being the environmental science person I am, I know that there's something in these habitats that's contributing to more instances of CWD.
That's wild. What can people do for who are already on the land? I mean, I know that you have like a citizen science project, people can submit reports. So what would you suggest to people who spend a lot of time on the land and might notice something different, like an animal maybe wandering, not really focused and just kind of behaving strangely?
Yeah, and it's really easy. Like they have a general lack of fear of cars and people, of predators. And I feel like that, you know, is a way that that's something the virus is doing to the animal that's making it, that's helping the spread a little bit more, right? That's how viruses work. But this is a prion. That's what makes it really hard. Because the first thing people do is ask, how can I kill it? And there's no way to kill it right now, which is why it's a little bit scary of a disease, because it's not a virus or a bacteria. So I think if you're an average person out there, just a member of the community and not a hunter, when you're on your travels and when you're traveling from here to there, just submit a form on our website. If you see a deer, remember to take a lat long of the area or a GPS coordinate. And you can turn that on your phone's location services. So if you just turn your location services on in your phone settings, it'll pull up a location that you took the picture. And that'll help me map out where you've seen the sick deer. And then you can also call Joe over at the Blackfeet Fish and Wildlife Office if it's on the Blackfeet Reservation. And he can come out and take a better look at the deer in person.
So I'm going to share all of the details for how to submit a report in the show description for this episode, and also Joe's number. So people listening who are out there and see something and feel, you know, compelled to share the information that they can.
Absolutely. And so we're encouraging everybody to get your deer sampled, your deer, elk, or moose, get it sampled. You can bring the lymph nodes. I think the state is charging maybe a little fee and some shipping and handling if you send it out to, because the closest place that the Blackfeet Reservation has is in Bozeman, which is quite a few hours away. So you can bring your lymph nodes into Blackfeet Fish and Wildlife and they'll send them out for testing, and that's free of charge. The shipping and handling's on them, and also the any fee, because one of the hunters that they worked with got a $19 fee or something like that. So if you don't want to pay, bring it into Blackfeet Fish and Wildlife. And for any other questions, like specifically around CWD, not hunting, like he can't answer all the hunting questions, but specifically around CWD, you can call Joe at 338-7207. And then we're going to try to raise a little more money and use some of the, because EPA is one of the people who are supporting us in this project, the primary support for me, doing all this running around and route sampling and networking and outreach and all that. Yeah, it's an environmental justice rural community grant, I believe. And Indigenous people and Indigenous communities were prioritized for this small environmental justice grant. And so I put this big old study with Pete as a proposal to look at baseline environmental stressors of what could be contributing to where we find CWD at.
So what's your goal? If you had like an unlimited budget, what would you like to see be done about this?
I would love to keep people employed long-term, because that's our biggest problem in Indian country, so to speak, is having that lack of funding for multi-year endeavors. Like even our organization is year to year, and we're still looking for that general capacity funder or an endowment that gives us funding for many, many years. And so similarly, the jobs, Joe's job on the res is based on funding. And so I would love to keep the same people who are involved right now, gaining knowledge, getting experiential knowledge out there on the ground around CWD outreach and monitoring. I would love to keep this core group of people employed. There's about six or seven of us, me, Joe, and CWD biologist and dog handler. And it's just that general capacity funding and then actual project money, because we're going to be releasing I'm going to be using some of my grant for community outreach and gift cards. And I got to make sure that this is okay through my EPA grant manager. And if it's not, then I'm going to use a small budget from Indigenous Visions General Capacity. And we're going to do $20 gift cards for each test result that's mailed in. So each positive test result, if you just mail in your test results and then I may have the ability to map it, because even those negative test results are important to see that a test result was taken here last year and it was negative. There's a way to self-submit your lymph nodes to the state as well. So if you can't make it to, or say you're exercising your hunting rights out there in the state of Montana somewhere, you can also do self-submission, and that's collecting the lymph nodes. And there's some videos and some demonstration videos I'll show on how to cut the lymph nodes out of the head. And they're behind the ear jaw area. You put the lymph nodes sealed in a plastic bag. They recommend Ziploc bags, and then double bag the sample and wrap it in a paper towel. And then drop it off at a CWD sampling location. And the Blackfeet Fish and Wildlife offices for archery season, which is now, will be weekdays from 7 to 4:30, and then the weekends are on call. And then during rifle season, it's going to be Friday through Monday, 7 to 7, and then weekdays, 7 to 4:30 again. So Blackfeet Fish and Wildlife is available essentially Monday through Friday, 7 to 4:30, on the weekends on call, to submit your samples for free. And if you can't, then get them out to Bozeman. For every test result that's mailed into us, we'll send you a gift card.
That's such a great incentive, Sudha.
Well, it's worth it to us, you know, to know where these deer are. And then, and also appreciation, like you can send me your elk ivories too, if you want to, because I'm just a desperate Blackfoot woman trying to make a dress as well. But yeah, I have no hunter as a single woman out here. And I'm also a beaver woman, which prevents me from hunting. So in the old days, we would rely on our community members who were hunters, and we would make our exchanges as the bundle people and them as the hunters. And so just saying out there, if anyone wants to trade, I have an empty freezer.
Do it. Yeah. Hopefully someone steps up during this hunting season.
Right. And I do prefer, because of CWD and because of the unknown circumstances around it, I've kind of steered more towards eating antelope and bison, because they're the only ungulate, like, hooved species right now that are not getting it. And I think it was found in a sheep. I'll have to double check that, though. But I would love to know what everybody is going through, where they're at. So if you in your state is experiencing or monitoring or trying to manage the spread of CWD, just leave a comment on our page, because especially if you're a member of a tribal nation, because I don't want to rewrite the wheel. And if you're doing something to effectively monitor CWD, I would love to partner with you and highlight it and see if that monitoring works in our area as well.
Cool. Well, thanks for letting us know about all this. I know I've been following, and as a regular person, all the scientific stuff, it just seems really intense. However, it's so important, because so many of us rely on the plants and the animals physically on the land right now. I mean, mm-hmm. my family hunts regularly still to this day. Yeah. And all the medicines people are picking, So yeah, like that's huge. So thank you for all the work that you're doing.
Absolutely. And then for people, there's so many videos out there on YouTube that help you find out where those lymph nodes are. So they're in the animal's head. You can bring the whole head in to test. Or if you know where those lymph nodes are, people who test these things, they want you to leave 2 to 4 inches of the neck below the lower jawbone and the base of the skull to ensure those lymph nodes are present and not left in the carcass. If you can bring in the whole head, definitely do that. As far as I know, you're not going to lose, like if it's a trophy elk or something like that, you're not going to lose the head because it's you've got paperwork and tags assigned to you and making sure that that deer is either negative or positive. And then our CWD biologist is recommending that people wear latex gloves or some kind of vinyl gloves. Nitrile vinyl gloves, I think is what they're called. And they make gloves that go up to the elbows. And so when you're field dressing your animal, it's important. She thinks it's important that you are not touching any part of this lymphatic system because of the potential contamination that it brings. So wear gloves or personal protective equipment when you're field dressing these animals. And then also take a GPS coordinate or a lat long or the township range and section of where you harvested your animal and where the gut pile is, if that's different from where you harvested it. Yes, there's tons more questions.
We could probably do a part two and just do like updates as time goes on to like where you're at in this, you know, searching and sampling. But I'll share as much information as I can, including a video on how to locate the lymph node in your animal, but I'll share as many links as I can in the show description. Thank you so much for listening to the Indigenous Vision podcast. You can find out more about us on our official website, including how to contact us, make a donation, or play back any of our music radio shows or this podcast. Don't forget to share with your friends and write a review if you've got time. We totally appreciate you sharing your time with us.